Hi, and welcome to Thriving with Sarah and Jenny. Please join us as we explore how you can enjoy a happier life and a fulfilling career, things that aren't always that easy in our modern world.
We'll be taking a look to how you can explore well-being both inside and outside the workplace, how to prevent burnout, how to achieve true happiness in work and life, and so much more. So stick around.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Thriving with Sarah and Jenny. This week, we are absolutely delighted to have Kirsty Hayward join us. Welcome, Kirsty. Kirsty is a workplace consultant and founder of Kirsty Hayward Workplace Wellbeing Consultancy, and she does incredible work helping businesses to create future workplaces with a key emphasis on inclusivity and sustainability. So welcome, Kirsty, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. It's very exciting.
So I would love to hear more in depth, because sometimes I think people might hear future workplaces. What does that mean?
What is a future workspace? I get asked that a lot, actually, and it's a good question. The answers around that question are still evolving, really, and we're learning such a lot. The more that we observe and we analyze, and the more spaces that we're creating post-pandemic. I've been helping employers to create workspaces pre-pandemic and for quite a number of years prior to that. And then, as many of us did, we were working from home and starting to understand and think more about what it is we wanted to do longer term and what was our purpose and all that sort of thing. And I was then diagnosed with ADHD. That was a really interesting shift for me. And I wondered, how can I combine the two? How can I continue to create these amazing workspaces for businesses, but also how can we create spaces that are going to be more productive, more inclusive, going to support a whole variety of individuals rather than focusing on those that are perhaps slightly more creative or the louder individuals or the teams that spoke up more than the quieter ones. And so I wanted to create this real sort of inclusivity. And then for me, I'm very sort of social impact driven, as is the business. And I wanted to understand ways in which we could create sustainable workspaces. So using sustainable design methods, basically. And fast forward a few years and here we are.
Wow. There's so many pieces of that to pick up on. It's incredible. I'm going to start first. Inclusive workspaces, because there's so many conversations right now with a lot of my clients, and Jenny, I'm sure you have it with yours as well. How can we get more people back into the office? Why aren't people coming into the office? This is such a large conversation, even, forcing people back to the office, or you have to come in so many days. So when I met you and heard what you did and the way you described creating an inclusive workplace was kind of a big light bulb moment. So could you share some of your thoughts on that?
Yeah, sure. So in terms of the neurodiversity element and how the advice that I will give employers to be able to adapt their existing workspaces to support those individuals, neurodiversity overall has become an increasingly popular discussion point for many businesses recently. I think we all know that. And for those that aren't aware, it's a term that we say relates to the differences in the way that we each think and process, learn and behave. Mm. And some of the more common terms that you'll be familiar with are ADHD, dyspraxia, dyscalculia, autism, Tourette's and so forth. So, not many people are aware that you've got around 17% of people, although personally I think that number's increasing dramatically, of employees, have neurodiversity within the workplace, and therefore 17% of our clients' customers also have neurodiversity. And it's about understanding the ways in which we communicate and we market ourselves and, teach and support our staff to be able to do the best of their work at their abilities, really. So there are a number of things that you can do. And as I say, we will help to adapt physical workspaces. And we also do that through a variety of well-being initiatives, such as various types of workshops and coaching and support in that element too. So I hope that answers your question, but there are lots of different ways that you could do that.
Really. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, one of the things for me, which the words I felt seen was when you were talking about introversion, extroversion, in the open plan office, I guess kind of that was for me, in the works that I've been doing the last 10, 15 years, that's how workspaces have gone, right? Open plan, everyone visible. So, and you were describing the need to give people like me a space where they can go and be quiet.
Exactly. It's very common that you'll find that businesses will really, and it's really no fault of their own at all. There's no blame at all here.
No.
And that's what society thought. You know, we needed, open plan was the way forward, right? And that meant that we were all being inclusive because we're all in the same workspace. But if you think about the impact that will have on, just to give you an example, you've got, you know, the personality types, you've got sensory stimuli, you've got the mood that someone's going to be in that day, then you've got the disabilities, hidden and visible, and then everything in between. So it's very difficult to accommodate all of these elements of individuals all in one space. I mean, it's like putting a square peg in a round hole, right? It's not going to fit every time. Mm. So employers will tend to focus more because, you know, creativity and being stimulated is where you'll generate ideas and ultimately, you know, financial return. So there tends to be a lot of emphasis on those in workspaces, but ultimately that's not sustainable. So it's important really to create areas of restoration and retreat and focus and solo style working, because they are equally as effective and will contribute as much to bigger picture, really. So I do a lot of education around that.
Kirsty, I hear what you say, and I'm really excited for the work that you're doing, especially around helping build the awareness of the level of neurodiversity within the workplace that's already there. But what do you think is the biggest issue? Is it that the leaders themselves lack the understanding and awareness? You know, what does neurodiversity actually mean? How does that translate? Because what you're talking about is about being recognized for your point of difference in order to be included, and also to be allowed to operate in the way that's going to suit you best, which seems to come from a place of knowing who you're working with. And if the employers don't know their staff, then that's not going to work. But it's also at a different level too, isn't it? It's the colleagues, how they interact with each other. And also the third level, of course, is how we within an organization interact with our clients. So it's something that has to be thought of and managed at every single level. So I'm curious as to how do you surmount this challenge? Because it's a big challenge to get the understanding happening to a high level, and then to get the leaders to take action that's necessary to actually enable the change in thinking and the change in operating to create the future workplace that's going to suit more people more comfortably. I'd love to hear your thoughts about this.
Yeah, sure. Thank you, Jenny. It's quite a few sort of thoughts that come into mind around that question. Sort of lots of answers in there, I think, but to try to condense it, and I hope I answer your question. With my experience, I work with customers or clients that are small independent businesses, and I'm also delivering future workspaces. I just delivered 12 for an international global bank. And then everything in between. So we see customers and clients of all different kinds, sizes, backgrounds, styles, every single element you can imagine. And the common theme is that, you know, we're very lucky in the fact that people are now starting to become more aware. So there is some level of awareness there for many businesses. So really, they are the ones that we are dealing with often than not. And they will come to us and say, look, Kirsty, you know, we were working with you before, perhaps on creating workspaces pre-pandemic, or, you know, we've seen some of the work that you've been doing, or because I'm very active on LinkedIn, they've perhaps seen some of the content I've been producing. What is it we're not doing? What can we do more of that will help us become a more neuro-inclusive or sustainable business? And then there is really that tough part, the beginning, the educational piece isn't as necessary because they are already aware that there is a need, and we're providing a solution to that need. And then on a separate level, you've got the people that perhaps aren't aware at all that they need to do anything, or perhaps just like, no, we're going to carry on doing what we're doing. Open plan is the way forward. This is what we're going to do. But those businesses will ultimately suffer, sadly, as will their employees, to a point that I think that they will have to do something about it. And then it's at that point they will come forward and say, how, breaking this down, how do we move forward? How can we retain our employees? and get customer loyalty? How can we recruit better talent? How can we encourage staff to want to come and work and be in the office or the workplace? And, you know, creating a more inclusive, sustainable working environment, happier, healthier, you know, productive, that's going to take natural course. So I don't know if I've answered, have I answered your question there, Jenny?
That's great. And I think you're right. The more we talk about it, the more it helps to take away some of the misinterpretation of what it is that you're trying to achieve. And I think in context, along with, you know, part of workplace futures has to be reducing stigma that's attached to difference, whether it's in mental illness, whether it's in burnout, loneliness, social isolation. We've got all these challenges, which I think can only be overcome by getting better at talking about them openly and sharing our own experiences so that we can all learn and do things better.
Yeah, agreed. Absolutely right. And this is an evolving process as well, you know, right? So we're all still learning and evolving, and I wouldn't for one moment sit here and claim to have all the answers to everything. But what we do is I'm doing a lot of observational studies and analysis on our spaces that we've been creating. What we're seeing is that people, as you would expect, really want to be opportunity for, you know, to be creative, to be able to focus, to be able to concentrate, to feel this level of social connection, to feel part of something. And these are all the things that I think we already knew prior to the pandemic and people working from home. I think working from home for some of us in isolation and some compacted into a house with a big family, and I think either way, sort of, it's going to be having its challenges, right? But it's about how we can create the workspace to allow us to have those opportunities for the things that I've just explained, particularly opportunities for choice and empowerment and independence. And, you know, it's very, very simple, really, if you break it down. And I just think we got lost along the way somewhere, personally.
Oh, yeah. I'm really, you said reconnecting in the workplace. And that's something that any of our regular listeners and Jenny will know is kind of, that's my reconnection was my word for 2022. But it's just so important. You know, I strongly believe that kind of relationships in the workplace and community in the workplace is, you know, that's actually everything for a workplace. So how do you help people? Because that's, I think, something I hear all the time. How can people reconnect with each other? So how does that play into the design of the workspace for you?
Well, that's a good question, actually. So it comes back again to the configuration, really, is a key part of that. Not only, but, you know, it's a very easy thing to explain, which is, you know, coming back to the sort of what I would call zoning. So creating areas that promote those sorts of opportunities, really. So creating areas for collaboration and communication, you know, in a large open plan office, and I work in a co-working space from time to time, you know, you see it very often where you've got, you know, people trying to work right next to the kitchen area, for example. It's a very small area. You feel like you have to go in to kind of go make a drink and then leave because you're disturbing other people. Just something as small and simple as that. And I see that so often in workspaces, the amount of open plan kitchen workspaces that I see, or dining areas, or however, you know, eating areas, canteen areas, that has a direct impact on everybody in that space. The ones that are going in to go and make the, you know, the food and have a social chat. We all know that we like to have a good old chin wag over a coffee or a sandwich or at the vending machines or, you know, in the queue at dinner, whatever it might be. And, you know, it's about understanding, okay, so the objective here is to create a space that promotes connectivity. Are we looking for that to be a social area? Are we looking for that to be a workspace area? And how are those teams going to integrate? What circumstances do we want to create from this specific area? So it's just about making sure that the right tools, the right furniture, the right colors, the textures, the environment, the sound, whether you want sound in that area or do you want to prevent having external sounds in that area and looking to sound mask it. It's about how you really configure that space to facilitate what it is you're trying to achieve. So there are lots of different ways that you can do that, but that would be a very simple example. I love that.
But it's simple for you because that's your thing. I just think those are all fantastic questions. Like all of a sudden, like, yes, these are all the things you need to think about. You can't just have a kitchen. That's why I'm so drawn to the work you do, because when you explain it, you go, of course, I need to think about all those things. But in the general day-to-day work, sometimes we can forget, you know, what do people need functionally or transactionally rather than thinking about it in that way. That was such a beautiful description.
I just thought I like to have a good old chin wag over a coffee. You know, I have an office in the co-working space, and the reason that is a perfect example. I'm sat in my office now. I've got the environment set exactly how I need and how I like to work to focus. So I've got everything from my radio. I've filled the room with plants. I've got, you know, white light in here. I've got, you know, everything that I need in here to feel comfortable. The aircon is set to my temperature that I like. But equally, if I want to go and socialize and have a conversation with someone, I want to be able to go into a space that I know that I can go and connect and talk and have a discussion with other people around just my day, how I'm feeling, well, how are they feeling? And then as a result of that, you know, creativity starts flowing and you meet people and you think, oh my God, I hadn't thought of that. And oh, we're just chatting through the project with them. And ultimately you're creating productivity as a result of that to then come back into your quiet area to then come and focus again if that's what you need to do. So I literally live that example day by day when I'm not on my site. So it's very effective.
I love that. I want to flip it around because I'm super interested in that as a, you know, mostly introvert, sometimes extrovert, but mostly introvert, to do my deep work and all those things, exactly what you described as that to a T. But extroverts, I feel like they sometimes get a hard knock because they're the loud ones. They need to be talking all the time. They're this, they're that. So how do you give them the space to be their best selves? What a tip or something you've seen or done that inclusive in that way?
That's a really interesting question because I would consider myself to be an extrovert for sure. And actually, it's very important to me to be able to have quiet time because I am so easily distracted, first of all, and not willingly either. When I've got stuff I need to do, I just want to get it done because I'm not a big fan of, you know, paperwork and lots of admin. And I'm very fortunate my job doesn't require a lot of that. So I'm very lucky. But for some, that isn't the case. And they do have to get through lots and lots of paperwork and concentrate and have a focused space who are extroverts. Who would consider themselves as an extrovert. I think everybody's on a sliding scale.
Somewhere. Yeah, that's a really good point. Thank you.
that's okay. So I think, you know, it's about if you're providing an inclusive workspace, you will have, depending on that individual's, as I said earlier, the mood, the personality type, how they're feeling that day, did they sleep well, you know, just everything around that whole person's personality for that day, there will be a space that will cater to that, whether it be a quiet area, whether it be an area of focus, whether it be an area with, you know, promoting some nature, whether it be an area where they can go and sit in a phone booth and make some private calls, whether it's an area they need to collaborate. There really doesn't need to be very many different types of spaces. You know, you could cover a whole workspace within sort of five or six different areas, less perhaps in some cases, if there's a particularly small budget. It's perfectly doable. And there's an immediate positive impact, not only on the employee, but also on the business.
Esty, I think you've hit on something that's so important, and that's sort of the diversity of the environment that we operate in and making sure that we can fully engage using whichever sense we need to engage with at that time. And one aspect which I know is particularly important to you, and I'd love you to talk around this a bit more, is the need to include nature in our workplace environment. Biophilia, as someone who is very drawn to nature myself, I need to have plants, I need to have access to sky and things around me in order to feel well, function well. Do you see this as being something that's going to become more normal to be included in future workplace design from here? I mean, some buildings we already see are doing this beautifully. You walk in and you automatically see the green walls, you see masses of plants, and you can see thought has gone into the design and layout of the workspace to incorporate that greenery. Tell us, why do you think this is particularly important, not to just one person, but to all of us? Why do you think it's so particularly important for us in our work days to have some aspect of nature around us?
Yeah, great question. So with biophilia, yeah, it's no coincidence that you feel, or I don't want to speak for everybody, obviously, but where many of us will feel more calm, collected, focused, and we're innately drawn to being in nature. So, you know, you get to the top of a big hill after a walk and you let it out. There is so much science around this, where, you know, as human beings, we are innately connected to nature. You know, if you come back to the the days before we had houses and we were all living in this society that we're in today. That was all we knew. That, you know, it's a scientifically proven concept. And for me, it's fast becoming the future of how we create workspaces. So absolutely, you know, I'll say the words biophilic design and people are like, what does that mean? Or they'll think, oh God, that sounds expensive. Usually one or the other. You know, I remember my first mentioned to my mum, she was like, well, that's plants and stuff, isn't it? It's like, yes, mum, plants and things. Yeah. Biophilic, she still thinks that now, actually. But I've told her countless times. There we are. So with, you know, with biophilic design, of course, it's the concept of plants because biophilia is related to plants, obviously. But there are a number of components, and these things include things like colours, textures, materials, furniture, airflow, scenery, light. You know, these are just some examples that all have a direct impact on our productivity and overall well-being. So there are break into three components, and our and Oliver Heath Design, who are our design associate partners, you know, we'll talk about this a lot. There are three key aspects to biophilic design, and that's direct nature, that's indirect nature, and space and place conditions. So that's sort of the more technical element around it. But, you know, by having somebody in a space where there is biophilic or sustainable design is the other way I refer to it, there is an immediate impact. You will see an immediate direct impact on their well-being, productivity, physical and mental health. Wow. You know, there are so many examples of businesses carrying out test spaces, which are smaller areas for people who would like to trial this out on a smaller area that perhaps is dormant or not being utilized, or perhaps they have a smaller budget or just a smaller space. So, you know, we can do a pre and post occupancy analysis on that area, add some of these biophilic design principles, and then as a result, they will see the direct impact there and their return on their investment. And that's an extremely effective way of showing the result before they invest into, you know, to creating their workspace with biophilic design.
Wow. I was going to say, it's great when people get to experience that for themselves before you've even got the research statistics in from, you know, to get the objective data as to the impact it has on people's level of focus, attention, productivity, etc. I think when people are feeling better from the environment that they're in, it's automatically going to have a sort of ripple effect on everything that we do personally, but interpersonally as well, with workplace stress being such a major issue and contributor to the burnout epidemic and the mental health challenges that we are having to deal with. It is this sort of going back to the basics, which I think is so profound in that when we understand that connection between ourselves and the planet that we are part of, we actually operate at a far more effective and happy level. And
yeah, there are so many benefits to everybody. This is why I'm so passionate about it. You know, it's good for the employee, it's good for the business. It doesn't need to be hugely expensive. You know, and also actually as a result, you can find businesses, we're seeing savings of up to 80% of their overall energy and running costs because you're creating a sustainable way of working. I mean, these figures are staggering. And this is why I just talk about it all the time. And I've just written another article about it, which is on my blog, on my website. It's an absolute no-brainer.
We'll put that in the show notes for anyone listening to make sure they can read that.
0%, wasn't it? 80% you're talking about.
It is, yeah. 80% savings on energy and running costs, up to 13% increase in workplace well-being, 15% improvements to productivity, 22% reduction in the use of medication in healthcare environments. This has also been proven. 25% increase in learning levels in educational environments. And then you're also seeing significant reductions in symptoms for those with things such as ADHD, for example. The list is endless.
Whoa.
Benefits of this process. No, those are some stats that we've seen, yeah.
That's amazing, Kirsty. So how is best for people to reach out if they've heard you and like me and Jenny have gone, I want some of that in my life?
Thank you very much. I hope that's helpful. So you can find me on my website, which is www.kirstyhayward.com, H-A-Y-W-A-R-D. Or you can send me an email.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll put all of that in the show notes for people. Yeah.
Thank you so much. Or my LinkedIn as well. It's just Kirsty Hayward, and I've got a little gold star next to my name, so I'm easy to pinpoint with the green background. So yeah, just Amazing. Check out some of my content and just have a look. And if there's anything of interest, I'm happy to help or advise, because, you know, I'm genuinely passionate about doing good things for the planet and the people within it. I really feel like this is the way forward. And the more that we can do, you know, on an educational level, hopefully the more people will hear and think, okay, I'm ready. Let's give this a try. Let's just see what we can do with this. And I'd love to help. So thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. No, it's my pleasure. Would you have anywhere between 1 and 3, because I know I'm just throwing this at you now, you know, what are the best tips you have that listeners can either go and do right away, or they can start doing?
Sure. Well, the first thing I would always say is, you know, have a discussion with your employees would be the first thing. I think so many people are so busy and just focusing on what they're doing and just keep going faster, you know, that's not necessarily the end result, their productivity. Just stop and have a discussion and speak to your employees. Understand what are some of the challenges that they're feeling and facing, because on a practical level, and how they're feeling is really, really important. And as a result, you'll see, you know, providing you listen and you implement some of these changes, not just in all of them, but, you know, maybe 1 or 2 to start with, and build that trust back. And make sure that you have a workspace that is flexible and you're providing plenty of opportunities for creativity and also retreat, restoration, and solo working. Don't forget about those quieter moments that we sometimes need to focus.
I love that idea of retreat and restoration in the workspace. That is beautiful. You said it before and I wrote it down. I'm really down again.
Thank you so much.
I'm 40.
Yeah. That was incredible. I knew it would be. I want to go and see some of your designs, so maybe I can come and visit.
Yeah, of course.
But thank you so much for joining us. And we look forward to seeing everybody else next time on Thriving with Sarah and Jenny. And if you'd like to let us know, what have you done in your workspace or your workplace to incorporate some of that inclusivity and sustainable design? We'd love to know what bits you're working through or working on right now. Thank you everybody for joining us.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Thriving with Sarah and Jenny. We hope you've enjoyed listening to it as much as we did recording it.
And you can always get involved in the well-being conversation at all of our social links in the show notes. Until next time, stay safe, stay happy, and thrive in whatever you do.